I've been getting a lot more sleep. I've been forcing my body to sleep. You know, I've been back in the gym a lot, lifting, and I don't remember where I saw this, but someone basically said sleep is an important tool in your training as any other exercise. So I've been trying to take that to heart because I'm not good at it, and I'm very bad at Jamie will say I'm like a little kid when I get tired. I'm like, I don't want to go to sleep. I'm not going to sleep. So I'm trying to work on that.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I have a very mixed relationship with sleep. Do you find that when you're getting more sleep and when you're doing more gym stuff and that sort of thing, do you find that you notice a big difference day to day?
Yeah, I do. And like I notice very different things about them. So if I'm getting more sleep but not necessarily working out, it doesn't mean that I have more energy. I just feel less tired, if that makes sense. I don't feel groggy, but if I'm working out and sleeping properly, then I have more energy. I'm not tired, but I'm also able to focus. I find that exercise helps specifically with focus and being able to maintain the same thought for longer periods of time. So in conjunction, they seem to work pretty well, but I tend to forsake sleep more than I should, and it kind of throws a wrench into things. But I don't know. It's just one of those things where that's just a place where I lack discipline. It's not that I'm so productive or I have stuff to do that I stay up late. It's just I don't want to go to sleep. I always have feelings like, oh, I have so much I can do instead of going to bed. And then I don't do them instead of going to bed. Instead, I'll play Destiny with my brother and Jamal.
Sure. Yeah, that's how it goes.
But yeah, it just comes down to another area that I could use some more discipline in.
Yeah, I'm very much the same way where I won't want to go to sleep and I'll stay up super late working on stuff or just goofing off, whatever. But then once I'm actually asleep, of course, my body is very happy about it and then just wants to stay asleep for forever because I don't sleep enough.
My body doesn't do that. My body just wakes up 7 o'clock. I'm awake. It just eyes open. No matter how late I went to bed, it's just like, all right, you got stuff to do. I'm one of those people that wakes up and I'm ready to go immediately. Now, if I don't have coffee, I'll come to a screeching halt around 10. But I wake up just ready to go, which is great because now working remote, I just saunter across the hallway and I'm productive, which is, you know, helping me work less. I get more done. I work less hours at my desk. So it's been pretty okay. But yeah, I just, as I grow older, learning more about discipline, different areas of discipline in my life, food being another one of them, you know, cooking, eating well, cooking the right foods, eating the right foods. And yeah, so I've been into focusing more on myself and my body lately than like trying to produce more things, like trying to produce more open source things or trying to write more music or anything like that. I think for a long time, my focus was on the output of myself. And now I'm trying to focus more on the input of myself, the foods I'm eating, you know, the rest I'm getting, the exercise that I'm doing. And I think that if you can tune the input, then the output will come with that as well.
Yeah, that's something I've noticed as well over the last couple of years, especially, is just that kind of as I have a bit more life experience, I'm able to realize how different things affect me in a lot more nuanced ways. So one thing, for example, is sometimes, fairly often, if I'm having trouble focusing, I will just go take a shower now. And that completely resets me and I feel great and I'm able to be super, super productive. And I never, that just kind of never clicked for me before, but it's a real thing. And that's kind of a weird thing, but that's part of what makes it interesting and useful is because it took me a long time. I mean, I've been myself for my whole life, of course. So, but it took me, you know, 20 something years to actually realize, oh, this is a thing I can do for a quick reset in a lot of cases.
I guess that makes sense, right? I mean, you're so used to taking a shower before you have to be productive or have to go to work for so many years. So your body's just conditioned to feel that way after a shower, which makes me kind of want to try that. But something that works for me is I'll just kind of like turn and do that in a Serban and I'll pick up a guitar for a little while, or I'll go into the living room, I'll go outside, just away. Like I have to get away from an LCD screen for a little bit, and that seems to help. But I might have to try that shower thing, especially I assume that works late at night if you're tired or something too, right? It might wake you up.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's weird because what it's kind of resulted in is that I tend to take showers at really odd times now. So sometimes I'll shower in the morning, sometimes at night. It's just, it like is completely random. It's more based around when I need to be productive than anything else.
Is it like a hot shower or a cold shower?
It depends on the day, you know.
I'm a cold shower kind of person.
Good cold shower can be nice once in a while.
After the gym especially, because if I don't, then I will just keep sweating. It's terrible. When I wrestled in high school, I would go into practice at 220 and I would literally walk into the locker room at 215, 215 pounds. I'd lose 5 pounds of water weight every day.
Oh, geez.
Every day. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But anyway, it is interesting as you get older. I've had a couple people actually PM me and ask me how old I was. So for anyone that doesn't know, I'm 29. I'll be 30 next year. And so as I say, as I'm getting older, it's kind of like just 30, you know. Some people freak out about the number, but I'm not going to freak out about the number. But anyway, as I get older, I'm learning more about myself, more like you said, like more how to kind of play your body like an instrument almost. Like, you know that if you need to be productive, you can kind of trick yourself into doing what you need to do. Essentially, you learn more about yourself. So yeah, that's what I'm learning about. And it's besides, you know, JavaScript and all that on a personal level, it's been learning about myself. It's just something that I've never taken some time to do, or no one's really ever encouraged me to do that. Everyone's really encouraged me just to work hard, you know, work harder, work harder, work harder, and read more and study more and program more. But no one really kind of encourages you to like not do that and focus on the other side of the spectrum.
Right. Well, I mean, I think like everything, like literally everything we talk about on this show, it's a balance, right? Because obviously if you don't really put that work in, if you don't work at it really hard, if you don't pick all this stuff up, you're never going to be great at programming. You need that knowledge, but it's important to also focus on everything else around that, because you aren't just a computer, even though you're programming computers.
You know what's interesting is that a lot of people kind of reference that feeling of satisfaction they get when they're programming. They get that feeling like when something works the first time, they say like they're addicted to that feeling, like, oh man, it works, I made this thing and it works, right? What's interesting though is that the more that I work on skills outside of programming, say like cooking, the more I learn how to cook, I kind of get the same satisfaction. Like, I made a really badass pizza the other day and it was good. And I felt the same feeling as when I, you know, made my first API and things were using it, which is, maybe it's not funny. Maybe, I mean, that's just part of life. Like, you, when you practice a skill and then you have something good come out of that practice, you know the time that you put in. The time and effort you put in, when you have, you know, fruits actually showing from that time, you just kind of get that, you just get a good feeling from it. And so I guess I've been learning more to apply the addiction that I have to programming and that feeling of making things to other areas like cooking or going to the gym and seeing results or just anything in general, really.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, a lot of my job at Imagix, especially over the last, I guess, couple months now, has been not so much about programming and really a lot more about talking to people, organizing stuff. I put together that UX event recently, and it exercises very different brain muscles, but it does get you a lot of that same kind of feeling, that same awesome feeling when you pull something off. And I think that's really cool. Just that you can kind of be doing stuff that's not really programming related in your job, directly at least, but still kind of get those same feelings, get the same value out of it for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And to kind of make myself feel like I am being more productive, sometimes I'll have like a Pluralsight video playing in the background. Like, I've been learning Redux, and so I've had a Redux course streaming while I'm cooking or something like that. So I'll just kind of, it's not that I'm paying extreme attention to it and cooking at the same time. It's more like I am subconsciously letting terms sink into my brain. And so, you know, when I'm reading documentation, I'll see a term and I'll be like, oh, I kind of know a little bit about that because I was cooking the other day and I was kind of listening to what this person, I got the gist of what they were saying essentially. And I find that that actually helps me cover more ground faster because everything that I'm seeing when I'm reading isn't necessarily a new topic. It's kind of like something I know a little bit about, if that makes sense. And when I do feel like maybe I didn't learn enough that day, or maybe I didn't get enough done that day and I need to put more time into learning actual programming things, that's what I'll do. Like, if I go to the gym and I feel like I haven't been as productive, I might throw in a podcast that talks about a topic that I'm learning, or I might actually, if I'm running on the treadmill or riding a bike or something, I'll pull up YouTube on my phone and look at like coding videos or something on my phone. And so that way I can kind of spread it throughout the day and I still kind of get that saturation. There's kind of always information coming in, but I'm not just sitting at my desk all the time.
So you mentioned just a second ago that you're reading a lot about Redux. Are you using Redux in anything yet?
Two things.
And Exodus?
Yes, in Exodus. It's coming along. Some design stuff's happening, which is really sick. It looks way better than I could have come up with. So once the design stuff is kind of more signed off, I can get in and plug things in. But yeah, I'm using it there, and I'm using it for another project. I don't know if I'm allowed to say their name yet.
Sure.
For Octopus. But yeah, I'm using Redux in that project as well. And yeah, so the reason why I ended up going with React is because Charles wanted to hack on something together. So he's familiar with React, and I wanted him to be, you know, him as a designer, I wanted him to feel productive. So I was like, yeah, let's just try React. And also had the added benefit of me knowing I had to actually make something with Redux coming up. It helped me out there. But
so how's it been so far?
Rough. So I think, well, I know what made this more difficult is that they say that, you know, if you're learning React and Redux together, you're gonna have a harder time just because React is a big thing to learn. There's lots of best practices and patterns to learn. And then when you throw Redux on top of that, it just kind of compounds that. And on top of that, there's also a deadline that I'm facing, you know, so I feel a little bit rushed. But in the beginning, I think that what made it difficult was, for me, the documentation for Redux was a little bit hard to follow. Lots of computery terms, things that I'm unfamiliar with, I suppose. And there just being so much information out there about it, it's almost hard because you read one thing and this person says this, and you read another thing and someone says something contradictory. So it's kind of hard to move forward knowing you're doing what's right, in a sense. But what I ended up doing was focusing on the React stuff first and kind of scaffolding out the design stuff for this other project. And as I learned more about Redux, I just kind of built it piece by piece. So at first, you know, I installed Redux and I got it plugged into the router, and that was it. And then next I added, you know, an API call action and was able to fetch data and call the good there. And then now I'm starting to split it up, because before it was just one API call that fetched all of the data. So there's articles and guides, and the API call just fetched all of that stuff at once. So now I'm starting to split it up. When you go to a certain view, it's going to get the information that it needs. So I just kind of dumped it all on top, and I'm kind of carving it out like a sculpture.
Are you at a point yet where you can say, I like this philosophy, I like this approach, even though I don't understand all of the nuances of it yet? Or are you still kind of undecided at this point?
Oh, no, totally. I'm a fan of the philosophy. I'm a fan of Redux. So I've built a number of SPAs by myself in different languages, Vue and Backbone, and I've always kind of had my way of dealing with data and dealing with state. And what's interesting is when you're going through something and you're kind of building things on your own and you kind of have your own standards to follow, when you read other people's articles, you're like, oh, that's a good idea, I should try that. But in a sense, you kind of always apply it to how you understand SPAs to work or how an application should be built. The difference with Redux is that when I'm building something with Redux, I have a set of standards to follow. And so I can go and look at source code and say, oh, that makes total sense, I should be doing that. It's not necessarily like this is a different way of doing it. It's more of like this is a more correct way, or yeah, I could say a more correct way of doing things. And most of that comes from that person having experience down the road that I don't have yet. And a tangible example of this would be how people turn their Redux actions into constants. And if you're unfamiliar, a Redux action has a type, and that type is usually a string. People usually uppercase, what would you call that, Paul? It's like uppercase snake. It's like letters, it's like letters split up by underscores, capitalized snake.
Yeah, I think that's called, that has a name. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway.
Constant case.
Yeah, constant case. But pretty much all of your actions are constant case like that. And so what I saw people doing was they'll have in their actions folder, they'll have an action type file. And literally all they'll do is export const name equals name as a string. And so at first I thought to myself, why would you do that? That seems like an extra step. All you're doing is taking a string and turning it into a constant and using that instead. And so in your action file, you would do import star as types from your action types file. And that way you can do types dot name, and that would essentially equal the string. And at first I was kind of against that. I was like, that seems like another step. That's kind of confusing. I don't understand why you do it. And then I started reading more behind it, And there's basically like one main reason people do that, and it's because if you misuse a constant, the compiler will throw an error. Whereas if you misuse a string like a typo, for example, your compiler will not throw an error and you will not know until you come across it in your application, right? So there's lots of little things like that in Redux where there's like pro tips that first time I read it, I'm like, why would you need to do that? That seems like so much work. But when you start to become more familiar and you get down the road to that experience, you're like, that makes perfect sense.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the classic way to describe that would be a runtime versus build time
error. Yes. Yeah.
And the more build time errors you can have, the better, because runtime errors are unpredictable and hard to catch, but build time errors, course, they'll always be caught.
Exactly.
And another real nice advantage of having that kind of types file with those constant definitions is that it makes it really easy for someone who's new to the project to just jump in there and see what's available to them.
Exactly. And that was the second thing that I saw people talking about, is that you can organize it in such a way that if you have a bunch of user actions, you know, you could put comment users and then have all those kind of by themselves. If you have like articles, you could put like comment articles and have all those by themselves. So it is kind of like a dictionary map of all of the things that can happen in your application. And that's why another reason why I like Redux is because you have a finite number of actions that can happen in your application, and nothing will happen that you basically did not tell it to do because you are defining all the actions.
So it's kind of funny to me that you've been doing all this Redux stuff, and because I've actually been doing a fair bit of digging on Vuex, which for anybody who doesn't know is basically the Redux equivalent in Vue. And I've been reading on the 2.0 because this project that I've been researching it for is a Vue 2 app, and it's been super interesting. So I haven't actually done anything with Flux or Redux or any of those other systems. I'm familiar with the basics of them. I understand, you know, the concept, but I haven't used them in a scaled application yet. I haven't used them in any real sense. So learning about it from the Vue perspective has been really interesting to me because it already is a lot more sensible, at least for me, just because I am used to the way that Vue works and the way that Vue developers tend to think about things. One of the things that I've really liked so far is just that there's a place for everything. And this is defined super well in the docs. So any async stuff that you need to happen happens in your actions. There are getters where you can store more complex logic so you can keep things dry in your individual components. And then modules, so that you don't have a whole monolithic, just a single giant data structure somewhere that defines everything in your app. You can actually break that up, and each module can have its own actions and getters, and it lets you really modularize things in a super clean way. And I think that's so awesome. And the docs do a fantastic job of giving real world examples, which I know people learn, of course, in different ways. But myself, I've always been someone who learns best from examples. Like, I can read about the theory of something and like understand it, kind of grasp it. But until I see a solid, here's actually what this looks like in code, here's how you actually handle an async thing in something that is at least semi-close to a real world example, it tends to not really click for me. So that's been super helpful.
So it sounds like modules are kind of like actions and reducers put together. That sounds pretty cool. And that's kind of what I've always liked about Vue, is that it always felt really put together. And I think my first initial impression of React was it felt less organized than Vue. And I think the thing is that out of the box, Vue comes with a number of ways that you can organize things, whereas React, there's more like best practices and community guidelines that kind of walk you through how to organize things. But there's not necessarily like, this is the React way to do things. Maybe there is. But for what I'm gathering, there's far more community kind of guidelines than there are internal things. But with Vue, it seems like everything has a place. Everything that exists in Vue has a purpose for being there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, specifically with a lot of Vue things, what I've noticed is that there aren't guidelines. It's just that the way Vue is designed, there's one way to do things in a nice way. It's just you kind of have to do it this way because that's the way that it's written. And I personally really like that, probably partially coming from a Rails background. I think that's a nice way to do it. And going back to the modules specifically, they're super cool because just like Redux, you still have just one global store, but the store itself, that top level one, in a larger application would typically be made up just of a bunch of different modules.
Right.
And so you would have all your module files and then you would just import them in your single store and there you go. It lets you just break out all that code into separate logical pieces while still getting the benefits of having a single centralized store, which I think is pretty brilliant. And it looks like it's going to work super well. So I'm really excited about that. And it's also just got some other really cool stuff. Like you can mix getters, mutations, and actions directly into components. So you can have methods on your components that are just aliased to the global store, and you can act as if you're just acting on a local component. You get to write the same kind of code as if you were just changing the local state, but you're actually updating the global store, which is awesome. I mean, it's kind of at that point, there's almost no reason to not use it.
So how do you hook your app up to that global store? Do you just, because I remember with U version 1, you would just pass the store into the app, the root level app. You would just kind of pass that in and it would know that it existed.
Yeah. So you can pass the store itself in as an argument to your top level view component, and then it'll inject it if you've done a view use. This is getting a little in the weeds,
sure.
But you can inject it so that every component will have a this dot dollar store,
right.
And that gives you access to the store. But then you can also use, for example, they have these helpers called map mutations, map actions, map getters. And so, for example, with map mutations, you can call that inside your methods on a given component. And let's say you have a mutation called increment, the most basic example that just increments a number. Then you can just call from inside your component, you can just call this dot increment. And that will actually perform that on the global store without you ever having to actually do anything, without you ever having to actually operate on the store itself. It just aliases it,
sure.
Effectively, which is super handy.
That's interesting. And that sounds actually really familiar to Redux too, because with Redux, there is, when you're setting up a container component, so Redux is really big on like dumb components, that there should be components that don't even know Redux exists and they take their data as props. But when you... So there's a middleware called React Redux, which you can use to wrap a React component to make it aware of Redux. And two of the functions that it takes, one is actually map state to props, I think it is. And so that is where you actually do like store, or you could say like articles colon this dot store to articles. So you actually map the store, like the stored state items to essentially local variables, and you pass it in a connect, and connect essentially just wraps that component and makes it aware. So it sounds like
that sounds like it's probably solving a similar problem.
Yeah, it just sounds like a little bit more or a little bit less boilerplate on the view side, but essentially it's kind of funny because they're almost named exactly the same too.
So, I mean, I'm not even sure. I still haven't decided if I actually want to use Vuex for this project or not. I'm still kind of figuring that out, but I just was going through the docs yesterday and spent, you know, a good probably couple hours reading, just figuring out how this works into things, thinking about it, how I feel about it, if it seems sensible. And I just think we've talked about this before, that spending the time up front before you make these big decisions about your app architecture. But I just want to say how important that is, because I didn't just say, okay, I'm going to use this thing. I actually went in and researched it and read about it. And I think a lot of times that's reading and researching is just as important or maybe more important than actually just writing code.
Beyond that too, it allows you to see past the marketing material, and you can kind of, you know, a lot of times I look at a library and a lot of people are sharing it and be like, this is awesome. It's going to save you so much time. And then the first click I make is onto the issues tab to see what's really going on, you know, to see like all the juicy details. And that's actually saved me some grief before, is like noticing, oh, for my use case, this thing is broken, you know? So like you said, getting into the docs, reading the docs is hugely important, but also kind of like checking under the marketing kind of face of things, like looking to see what's actually going on in the community behind there is pretty important. And actually I like that you said you're not even sure if you're going to use it. I mean, a lot of people might just blindly say you should use it because it's going to make X, Y, and Z easier. But on the other side, if your app isn't that complicated, it makes X, Y, and Z harder. And one of my favorite things that people actually say about Redux is that it makes implementing simple applications more difficult, but it makes implementing difficult applications more simple. I'm not sure why I like that so much, but when I first read that, I was like, yeah, that really makes sense. I mean, why would you want to apply the same paradigms to a simple application as you would to a difficult application?
Yeah, definitely. And kind of what I meant, I guess, a little bit by the reading and the researching can be just as or maybe more important than the programming there is, I guess that's something I've been thinking about a lot lately, is that the actual act of writing the code to do something is not really the interesting or challenging part of programming, at least in most cases. So sometimes it can be tricky to figure something out syntax-wise or whatever. But really, it's more about the architecture, and that's what's more interesting. The less code I can write, really, the better. If I can just spend more time thinking about the logic behind it and then write really short, terse code, that's kind of ideal. I mean, ideally, there is no code that needs to be written, and it can just all be composed from things that already exist. And someday, I assume, we'll get more to that point. But programming isn't really about the act of pressing the keys on the keyboard to make the things appear. It's really more about deciding these larger things and figuring out how to solve problems. And the code only exists because that's the best way we currently have to tell computers to do things. I don't even entirely know where I was going with that, but that just seems important to me, that people need to be spending more time researching, learning, and thinking about problems and solutions, in many cases at least, than actually typing things out.
It's really interesting that you say that programming is more about thinking about the architecture behind and not actually just typing, because I know for a fact that for a long time, programming to me was about just typing into a text editor. And that was programming. I'm programming, I'm typing in text editor. And that's why I had so many side projects that didn't launch, is because I was more interested in writing the code than the end result, or maybe the architectural decisions behind them. But no, that's a really good point that you make. It should be more about the decisions and composing than the actual act of typing. And I always use guitar as an example, but it's kind of like a lot of people think practicing guitar is picking a guitar and noodling. That's not the case at all. If you want to make actual measured progress, there has to be some rhyme and reason and a plan behind what you're doing. You know, it has to be like a focused progress, it has to be a focused practice rather. So yeah, that's really interesting. That makes me want to like look at what I'm doing from the day to day and see what my actual focus is and seeing if I can improve that at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I've been consciously trying to do, especially over the last few months, is spend less time physically writing code and more time figuring out what I actually need to be writing. And it turns out it actually kind of makes things easier and saves me a lot of time. I'm able to be significantly more productive when I'm actually typing because I put in the legwork up front to say, this is what I'm going to need. This is how all these things should tie together and how all these things should work. And I just have that mapped out a lot of times, just like in a nested bulleted list or something.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I'm going to have to look into that. I mean, obviously I still have my Dropbox paper thing going, which might be the longest running tool I've been using for to-do items. But yeah, I don't know. That's just a lot to think about.